You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 20th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, tomato, tomato. It is Casual Friday, ladies and gentlemen. I am at the Mass Tort Conference. Joining me on the program today, like every Friday, of course, except for this time, he's in the flesh, live in the flesh. It'll be Cliff Schechter. Also on the program today, on the two-year anniversary of the explosion of the BP Deepwater Horizon oil rig, the disaster still being felt on the Gulf Coast. We have Brian Barr, an attorney with Levin Papantonio, who sat on the steering committee of the plaintiff's steering committee, one of four firms, and they have a big announcement. Pre-recorded this yesterday, but a massive settlement, far outstripping that one that we know we got from the Exxon Valdez, so that's good. And also on the program today, I don't think we're going to have any movie reviews, although maybe we can get Scott Milliken, producer of Ring of Fire, to come. No, I don't think so. But ladies and gentlemen, sadly, stick around. It is Jimmy Reefer Cake's swan song this week. Scott Milliken just looked at me, almost fell off his chair. Cliff Schechter a little bit less upset. But before we bring on Cliff Schechter, let's bring on Cliff Schechter's theme song from Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
That's right, Cliff Schechter, LLC.com, or Libertas LLC.
Same thing.
Cliff Schechter, strolling in to the, what would you call this area here? The conference area? The exhibit hall of the Mass Tort Conference. With about 30 seconds to go, just enough time for him to get his pastry and his bagel and his fruit for breakfast. Now, I've been up for several hours because when you intend to lose as much money as I am in Las Vegas, you need to get up early. The early bird loses his kids' college fund. I think that's the saying. We will play that pre-recorded interview with Brian Barr a little bit later in the program. Now, Cliff.
Yes, Samuel. Thank you for having me, by the way.
Are you kidding? It's always a pleasure to have you.
To up your excitement level by getting here about 30 seconds beforehand.
No, that worked.
And I know it works for Scott, because he's always happy to see me.
Just adjust your microphone a little bit so you're square on there, because you know, I don't want to keep it too loud because of the...
Are we good now?
I think we are, indeed.
I'm an amateur, so you tell me.
Well, I'm not far from that, so I can only do my best. But, all right, so let's... It's been a crazy week for me. I haven't followed... There's been just so much... Like, I'm getting to the point where I don't even want to leave my house anymore. And by that, I mean, of course, not go on the internet, because I don't really leave my house that much. I go to the office, and, well, I guess I'm in Vegas now, but we have just entered into this era of, or this, I guess, this time of the campaign where it's just full-on idiocy. But before we get to that, you were telling me a story about Cantor last night. I haven't been following any of this. What is that?
I just heard about it yesterday and saw something briefly.
Is this something I should pull up?
I think you should.
All right, go ahead. You tell me about it.
Progress is where I saw it. There's been a little bit of a civil war going on. That's been going on for a few weeks. Cantor got involved in a primary in Illinois, two incumbents who were taking each other on. And if I remembered their names, I would say them right now. But I'm in Vegas, and, you know.
That's fine.
It has a way of taking away short-term and long-term memory. So already there's been a lot of other Republicans in the House have been attacking poor Eric Cantor. And it turns out in this recent interview that was done, I think it was Mike Allen of Politico, where he said, you know, do you think there's anti-Semitism in the House Republican caucus? And first of all, interesting to me, what would make Mike Allen just ask that out of the blue? I almost feel like...
That's not the standard question you ask anybody, really. I mean, that's not a question, obviously.
No, it's usually something you just take for granted.
Well, I have it here. Let's listen to it.
Okay.
It's Mike Allen interviewing Eric Cantor. You know, when anything ever happens with Politico, there's always another reason why it's happening. Let's listen to this first, though.
Have you detected any anti-Semitism among members of Congress?
I don't want to say anything about those remarks. I don't want to talk about anything having to do with the sort of darker side of any kind of comments made.
So you're saying there is a darker side?
I think that all of us...
Now, hold on there. Wait a second.
There's a darker side, Sam.
Well, but wait a second. You know, this is what I say about Politico. When Politico writes a story, or in particularly the Politico guys, okay? Yeah. I'm not saying necessarily everything that shows up on their website, but when one of these guys asks a question or a story comes up, it seems to me it's because someone has told them something so that they ask the question.
Yeah. I mean, they're an insider, as we know, newspaper in D.C. So these guys...
But it's always, they're carrying a message for somebody. Somebody wants this out there. Like, you know, the back when there was that story about the Obama administration, there was some leak about they think that Romney's weird. There was no doubt in my mind that was planted by the Obama administration. Even though it sort of seemed like it was vaguely critical, because they wanted that to be the story. That Romney's Mormon.
Politico creates a lot of the narrative, and you know, in D.C. And there's no doubt they're sort of steeped in the insidery.
Now maybe I didn't see what preceded this exchange here, but you've got Martin. Is it Martin who asked this question? Whatever the guy from
Allen. I thought it was Allen.
Allen. Okay, so Allen asked a question. Is there anti-Semitism in Congress? And then he responds, Cantor says, well, I'm not going to talk about those darker side comments. That is not the way a professional politician avoids that question.
That's exactly right. He wanted that question.
I'm not convinced that he didn't tell Mike Allen. This is a good question for you to ask me, because...
I wouldn't be shocked at all.
A professional politician does not, like, accidentally say, well, look, I'm not going to comment on the darker comments that take place in the House.
If you're any sort of even an amateur politician, that's an easy one to parry.
Yes. All right. Let's just continue, because this is interesting, because it's going to be... obviously, Cantor wanted to get this out there.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's listen.
That in this country... We've not always gotten it right in terms of racial matters, religious matters, whatever. We continue to strive to provide, you know, equal treatment to everybody.
But to sit here and say in America that we've got it all right now, I think that pretty much all of us can say we still got work for it. We're talking about the House Republican Conference, huh?
Look at the body language.
He literally just like lifted up his hands and just sort of shrugged. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I could be wrong, and these could be two distinct things going on. One, he got involved in the primaries in some ways, and he's given money to an organization that takes on incumbents sometimes for challengers. That's been a recent story, too. And
this is a war, obviously, between him and Boehner, right? I mean, this is the guys who are fighting.
Everything ends up being, yeah, because Boehner just cares about protecting the majority, and Cantor is obviously going against the grain somewhat and supporting people, whoever they may be, that aren't either incumbents that maybe aren't liked as much, or in the case in Illinois, you're supposed to stay out of an incumbent battle because of redistricting completely, because two incumbents are taking each other on. But I think what Cantor's getting at here, if I can somehow jump into the mind of
right, and we should just tell people,
effervescent Eric Cantor.
I'm getting a couple IMs that was really hard audio to hear. It really was. It was bad audio on their end. But basically, if you didn't hear what was said there, essentially what happened is Mike Allen said, you know, is there anti-Semitism in the House Republican Caucus? And Cantor responds with, well, you know, I'm not going to comment on those darker side comments. There's dark side comments everywhere.
I think and Mike the Emperor says, joined the dark side, and then he brought Anakin over with him.
But the point is, he was leading. He wanted that question.
Yeah.
He wanted to sort of just sidestep it but not quash it. And so it's fascinating. This has been an ongoing war. You know, the next thing we're going to hear is, we're going to hear more about Boehner's the dalliances would be my guess.
Yeah.
Because, of course, what's happening here is that we're getting close to an election, which means that the Congress is going to be differently constituted. And whether the Republicans hold the House or not, there's going to be a leadership battle. And this is what we're seeing.
I think that's it. But I do think I will add this, and it's not to give Cantor too much credit for being genuine about anything. But I do think, look, you see where a lot of the Republican caucus comes from, these Tea Party guys I'm sorry if I'm generalizing for people out there and I get offended, but a lot of them come from very rural areas, very southern areas now. And I think, quite frankly, enough of these guys have made comments that are clearly anti-Semitic in the past. I wish I should have prepared and had those in front of me. But then again, I only walked in 30 seconds before the interview, which always...
Right, you barely had time to comb your horns.
Exactly. Nicely played, Sam. I was just putting away the kafilta and combing my pants back so I could sit here. Anybody who looks at it knows there's anti-Semitism there with a bunch of these guys, these Christian right-wing nuts. And
right.
So I think Cantor at times feels a little bit of that, quite frankly.
He very well may, but that doesn't... That's a different...
I know.
That's a different
saying.
Question as to whether or not you're going to bring that out and make a story out of it. So that was... fairly interesting, and you had mentioned that to me. Now, I wanted to... We teased this yesterday. We'll get to the stupid Mitt Romney stuff just because... God.
Stupid Mitt Romney is just...
It's just unbelievable. I mean, it's just such a shame because I just... God forbid we actually ever talk about issues. And, well, we'll get to that. But we teased this yesterday... About, and you're a gun control advocate. You work for
Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Yes,
Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
I just say I don't work for them. I consult for them. But yeah, I'm very involved.
Okay.
I write on the issue a lot. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I had mentioned this yesterday, and John Sutton, bless his heart, pulled these stats from a New Yorker piece, from the current New Yorker. There are 300 million. Privately owned guns in this country.
Yes.
Oh, I know why we're talking about this, because
as many guns as there are people.
Right. We are number one in the world. You know, and that's... Look, there was a time we were number one in a lot of things. At least we're hanging on to this one.
I gotta say, there's some stiff competition from Yemen. So I'm pretty happy that we're still hanging in there.
We are not a overall... it's got to be more of a per capita.
competition.
Oh, that's what we're talking
okay.
about.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't know that we're still number one on a per capita basis. In 1972, now, of course, there were a lot less people in 19... Not a lot less, but, I mean, significantly less. And, you know, we're talking millions, tens of millions less. In 1972, one in two households owned a gun.
That's correct.
Now, I also want to remind you, guys like Abbie Hoffman, very pro-Second Amendment, as were the Black Panthers.
Yes.
In 2010, one in three owned guns.
That is correct.
In households. In 1980, one in three individuals owned guns. In 2010, one in five individuals. So we actually have...
You want me to throw out another interesting stat?
It's going to scare me, isn't it? Because we're heading down
no,
that road.
No, actually, it depends what your view is, but I think this is a good stat. Those over the age of 70, 48% own guns.
Wow.
Those between 18 and 29, 17% own guns. So the reason why that's an important stat in the households you brought up is it explains everything. In other words... The gun ownership, even though there's a recent binge on guns, and the NRA played this up because they're, if Obama's coming to take your guns, even though he just allowed them in national parks and on Amtrak and
right.
luggage, the point is that just like other demographic changes, where we're becoming more mixed, you've got these, where there no longer is there. You're white, you're black. We're a multi-ethnic society. Younger people tend to be more liberal on gay marriage,
right.
a variety of issues. Just like that, this sort of ancient the tradition the NRA is trying to push that everybody has to have a gun and whatever is dying in America, and they need to find ways, because in the end their board members are populated with big gun manufacturers, arms dealers as I call them, and that's where most of their funding comes from. Is there another group like ALEC that pretends it's just the regular people that fund us? It's not. It's the gun manufacturers funding them mostly, so they need to find ways to sell ever more guns, and that is your answer to why the stand your ground laws, guns in bars, if they can, every time they pass another concealed carry crazy law, like a stand your ground law, they sell more guns. Because then somebody becomes scared, hey, that guy's got a gun in public, I better get a gun myself to protect myself. This is their model for trying to fight demographics.
And I would imagine also that the value of of getting a legislature to propose a stand your ground type of law is that if it fails... It's another fundraising. It gins up more sense of look at this. They're striking down your right. They're attacking.
Which way.
Right.
And I mean, the nudge is one thing, and I want to get to that. But I mean, just to give you an idea how far they've gone, Rick Scott in Florida has now called this panel to look into potentially either changing or limiting stand your ground. Jan Brewer, again, we're talking about crazy people here, just vetoed the gun lobby bill in Arizona. Gun crazy Arizona, because they wanted to put guns in, allow you to take your guns into police stations, swimming pools, senior centers, and she said that's not even that goes too far for her.
Why does Jan Brewer hate the Constitution?
Why does she hate America? And if we don't fight her over here, will we have to fight her over there?
We're number one, people, and if we don't allow,
because of Jan Brewer, we may soon be number two.
God forbid. We lose this the pole position on the most guns in the world.
But I mean, that context I think everybody needs to understand, because that New Yorker piece I read, it was a terrific piece because it went into the context.
Who wrote it? Do you know?
I'm sorry.
People can Google it.
It also went into the background of where the Second Amendment came from. I don't want to bore everybody with that, but why the current interpretation is complete bunk. Bearing your arms back then meant going to war, and of course, it didn't mean going and shooting a varmint like Mitt Romney does. But we'll leave that for another conversation. The point is that gun ownership is going down, and if they really were just supporting, hey, you have a right to protect yourself in your home, which I don't have a problem with as long as you're not a criminal or a terrorist and there's a proper background check, then the NRA would actually be doing what they claim they're doing, which is just trying to protect people's rights. Protect themselves. They're not doing that. What they're trying to do is create a vigilante society where everybody thinks, everyone else has guns, I have to arm myself. It becomes a race to the bottom. And they need that because, really, at this point, so many fewer people, younger people, are buying guns, so many fewer households are getting guns, that they need to scare people through a variety of means into actually arming themselves with multiple weapons. I mean, what's keeping them going now are the gun fetishists who have like every new gun, you know, the gun, you know, that where you put your eyeball up to it, it automatically shoots. And you know, man, I'm obviously screwing around, but they're ever more crazy types of weapons is what they're trying to do. That's why they fight the assault weapons ban too.
You know, it's interesting because we see that. I think we see that in the we see a couple of business or models or industries that are dying, and we see how they attempt to save them through legislation, whether it's, frankly, the private insurance industry, which by all accounts was, they knew they were headed for a demographic, basically, iceberg, and yep. They, without the mandate, they would have been in big trouble. They wouldn't be able to function.
You see this with many of the churches and Christian right groups that realize that religiosity is on the decline.
And I would say you see the same thing in the music and content industries, which is why you start to get, like, you get, it's fascinating, it's a fascinating time. And, of course, then you also see, you know, the Ted Nugent industry, which is also quickly getting narrower and narrower. And so he has to get...
because, you know...
When was the last time the Nuge put out a new... Yeah, you can't. There's only so much residuals you can get, particularly when so many kids today are just illegally downloading Cat Scratch Fever. It's unbelievable how much money he's losing.
The hours the FBI spends on that, I think.
What's the latest with the new? You told me some funny story. I mean, I could care less on some level, although it is sort of funny. It is entertaining. It's casual Friday. We're in Vegas, I basically I've lost $47,000. I lost $47,000.
Kids don't need to go to college anyhow. It's overrated. No. You remember what Rick Santorum said? Don't be a snob, Sam.
No. She's going to be...
She'll be just fine. She'll plant, cherry trees?
Apple trees, yeah.
And then the coming apocalypse of global warming, and she'll be prepared to take care of herself.
Exactly.
Where were we?
The news.
Ted Nugent, yes. You know, he's got a history of these remarks. At one point, he yelled, I think I said Clinton the other day, and that's not true. He yelled on stage, you know, Barack Obama can suck on my machine gun. Well, relatively threatening statement. He's insulted all sorts, he made all sorts of homophobic, racist rants that he's called Africa, the dark continent of Africa, where civilization has never flourished. He's a columnist for the Washington Times.
Very high standards
for who they allow to just, they don't just allow anyone to opine in the august pages of the Washington Times.
I understand.
He wanted to up at someone. He spoke at he got paid $50,000. He's on the National Rifle Association board. And he spoke at their convention. And he called the Obama administration the evil, vile, America-hating Obama administration. We must do whatever we can to stop them. We must ride out into the field and chop their heads off. This is what he said. Like in Braveheart. Good film buff. If we get Chris Rosen back here, he can help enlighten us on that one. I got to give you some films too, but that's later.
Right. Okay.
But the best one of all was he said, at this time next year, if Obama's reelected, I will either be dead or in jail, which implies a threat. Why would you be dead or in jail unless you're going to attempt something on the Obama administration? That led the Secret Service to interview him.
Yes. No. That part of the story I knew.
That's actually, look, we like to joke around, and it is fun. Just the making stupid comments, the sort of Ann Coulter type stuff, we can joke around with and have fun. But that's actually something that should be covered, because that's serious. When somebody's threatening the life of the president and making statements, it reminds me when Jesse Helms made a statement during the Clinton administration that if Bill Clinton came down there, he might find himself getting hurt.
From the military.
Right, and the Secret Service went and interviewed Helms after that. It's important. Eugene Robinson wrote a terrific column on this week in the Times about Alan West's statement and about Ted Nugent's statement. You know, Alan West said that the progressive caucus are just a bunch of communists, and that these guys have made comments comparing people to cockroaches. And, you know, I know everybody always says, well, that sounds like Hitler. And I won't do the Hitler thing. It is Hitler's birthday, by the way. Happy big birthday.
Oh, yes. Sorry for being remiss.
But in a more serious context, do you know who used that language? It was the hate radio in Rwanda that referred to the Tutsis as cockroaches. When you dehumanize people, it makes it a lot easier for people to go out and kill them. And Nugent was threatening the president, was threatening people and making comments like that. He's a history of this. And so, you know, there's some interesting things going on. In Fort Knox, they just said he's doing a tour. If you want to get your 70s and 80s groove on, REO Speedwagon, The Styx, and Ted Nugent are touring. And in Fort Knox,
I think Styx and REO Speedwagon, they should also be investigated by the Secret Service.
Just for hanging out with that
just
guy.
Like, what's going on?
For having bad taste in
front. Are you guys still really the same guys? I'm a little dubious about that.
I will never forget, was it Alfred Molina? Do you remember in Boogie Nights when Mark Wahlberg, they all go over to his house, they're trying to rip him off on a drug dealer deal, and he's got that song going on in the background, and like he's like stoned out of his mind, you know, and he's like, you know, Sister Christian, and like, I don't know. If you don't remember, there's
vaguely.
I'm sorry. Sorry to bring that one
no,
up.
No, that's
all
right.
It was a cool moment in that movie. So, and it's also that movie is so like 70s and 80s, it kind of gives the context. So they just said they will not allow Ted Nugent to come and play in Fort Knox, and that people can have their, can go and get their money back if somehow of those three bands, it was Ted Nugent they were actually paying their money to see. But, I think this is part of the broader post-Trayvon Martin situation, which I've compared, funny that you brought up Politico, because I actually do contribute to Politico Arena.
Right, right.
And I just wrote a piece on, is this the Stonewall moment? Because I compared it to the Stonewall riots in 1969, when that really formed the beginning of the gay rights movement.
Right.
And I think this is a movement where you've got groups like Color of Change that are advocating for minority groups in the United States. You've got Vote Vets and groups advocating for veterans, law enforcement groups, good government groups, Common Cause, and others joining together now with anti-violence prevention groups, realizing that the kind of gun culture, the gun fetish, the far-right extremism that goes along with it is a threat, particularly to African-Americans. I mean, in Oklahoma, those guys that just drove around and started shooting random African-Americans, this is not an unusual thing. It's a threat to minorities, it's a threat to good government when people are showing up at government functions with guns and intimidating our government officials. It's a threat, really it's a threat to all of us who don't live in gated communities or might walk there by mistake. And so Nugent is a part of this, is a key part of this. And so I say, good, I'm glad the NRA is keeping him on their board. Let him keep talking. And even Mitt Romney himself, of course, I'm sure he'll come out with a statement like he did like the Rush Limbaugh one, because he said in an interview he's so proud to have Ted Nugent's endorsement for all the varmint hunting that Mitt Romney does. He hasn't come out and said, this is sickening what this guy said. I'm sure he'll just say something like with Rush Limbaugh, that's not the language I would have used. I would have used slightly different language. I wouldn't have called her a slut per se, but maybe perhaps a whore.
Right. Well, I guess now, if we're being consistent, I guess what happens next is that we organize some type of Ted Nugent MP3 burning, right? I mean, isn't that what they did with the Dixie Chicks? They burnt all their CDs, and of course, now is a different era, so now we're going to have to go out and burn some MP3s.
I remember the days when if you questioned your leader, I remember the great Joe Lieberman even said this on behalf of Bush. It was in the Wall Street Journal. It was dangerous to question your leader during wartime.
Very dangerous.
Last I looked, we still were fighting a war out
Never
there,
mind,
we?
Also dangerous to threaten your leader. Yes.
I find that's never helpful to give confidence to the troops and tell people abroad that we're a united country when you threaten to kill your leader. Do you have the Dixie Chicks? I'm marching, isn't it?
That's right. Do not question the leader. Okay. I did, it's when I'm on the road, I have Deutschland on my...
song.
Yeah, so...
I'd like to say, obviously, that I think that Ted Nugent purposely planned all this for Hitler's birthday.
There you go.
I think it's important to know. And, at least no one's told me any differently, so...
And now, what else? Oh, I guess we were going to talk about this Romney thing.
I was trying to give the great segue there. Up that Romney will not repudiate or refute, if you will.
Okay, we'll go into Romney. I also want to talk about what's interesting, that the whole question of the potential for a government shutdown. I don't know if you've been following this, but Obama had said that he will not sign an appropriations bill if the Republicans attempt to renege on the sequestration deal, the debt limit deal, which provided for essentially a little bit of more than a billion cuts, half of which come from the defense and the other half which come from discretionary.
Well,
frankly, I'd like all of that to go away.
You have to keep in mind that we might fall to the point where we only have as much defense spending as all the countries of the world minus one, as opposed to all the countries in the world right now.
That's right. I think we're actually double all the rest of the country, somewhere close to that. But the it's interesting because in the Senate, I believe it was yesterday, the Senate essentially voted to maintain that debt deal. And so this is going to put pressure on the House, and I think this ties back into that battle between Cantor and Boehner, because I don't think the Republicans want to shut down the government in September. And clearly the Obama administration thinks that would be to their benefit.
Romney people, knowing how it played out last time around, not excited about that prospect.
And it's going to put a lot of pressure on those Tea Party Congress people. So it's an interesting story.
A lot more people would become unemployed if they did that, just like Mitt Romney is.
The flip side of that, of course, is that the sequestration is a huge problem anyways. To cut that amount of money from discretionary spending, I mean, I have no problem cutting it from defense, but I would like to take those cuts and then spend it
right
on the discretionary side.
You know, in this kind of an economy, we don't want to be taking much. I mean, I'm always an advocate for cutting wasteful defense, and frankly, a lot of it because it's ridiculous. But during this kind of an economy, you don't want to take money out of the economy. We should take that money we're using on defense items we'll never need nor use. Move it on
over. Are you suggesting we don't need 780 bases around the world?
Although it's fun going to Okinawa, I'm just not sure there's a huge purpose for us there.
Right.
I like being at times in Uzbekistan.
Right.
Because remember, we always do stand up to Saddam Hussein type leaders, except for when they have nice staging areas for us.
Right.
I mean, you know, look, obviously, especially it reminds me of the whole thing with Ozzy Guillen criticizing Castro. We have bases in Turkmenistan. Like, we probably have a half dozen countries with leaders that are, let's call them at least as bad as Fidel Castro. But that, you know, that's for another conversation, I suppose. But I would take that money, and we could do really strange stuff, like build bridges, fix them up, you know, try to get within 100 years of China when it comes to high-speed rail. Really, really crazy stuff.
Yeah, you and Tom Friedman, very upset about high-speed rail. Do you realize, while we're talking about...
I'm even growing my mustache out like Tom, just so I can sort of empathize.
We'll get to Romney in a second, but this Tom Friedman thing, I just... God, I love this guy. He's complaining. Where is this Tom Friedman? This is from the other day.
Listen, just suck on this, all right?
One for the country. He's a big Bloomberg fan.
Did he say suck on it? Suck on this? Something like that.
Oh, yeah.
The Iraq War.
Oh, yeah. Are you not aware of the fact that I said that to him, back to him on MSNBC?
I was not, and now I feel like it's a clip I need to see.
Yeah, you got it. You know, it's not, it's really only fun if you're aware of that, but I did it to egg him on, and he was unclear if I meant, you know, but I think by the end he sort of knew. But so his first paragraph from a piece that he wrote this week: I had to catch a train in Washington last week, which you can almost hear is, I had to catch a train in Washington last week. He's already complaining. He's already whining because, you know, as a billionaire, because, you know, his wife is a billionaire heiress.
She only lost $20 billion or something during the...
They got it back.
They were only left with, I think, $2 or $3 billion.
Are you serious?
So you should have sympathy for them.
There's a picture online of his mansion outside of, I think, like Virginia
or
Maryland.
I've driven past it. It's actually Bethesda. I think it's Bethesda. It's right next to the country club there. It's insane.
It's an insane... So he had to catch a train in Washington last week, which is...
Doesn't he have a helicopter or something that can take him?
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, that if that's not enough to make you weep. The paved street in the traffic circle around Union Station was in such poor condition that I felt as though I was on a roller coaster. Now, what this total moron is referring to is that they are actually... I was just down in D.C. a week or two ago for that SCOTUS thing. They're fixing it. When they fix a road, they have to scrape off the top and they put those grooves in.
There's a weird interim process when you're fixing a road that... Yeah.
Roller coaster rails.
Yeah. Well, there's three stages.
You have to tear stuff down a little bit to build it up.
Right. There's three stages to building a road. There is the stage one, you clear off the top of the asphalt. Stage two, put in the roller coaster. Stage three, pave over the roller coaster.
Very
so
nice
this moron, he doesn't, he's so lazy.
I know.
Like, he is just like, he's probably not even, you know, he's just like, oh, bumpy ride. All right, good.
Do you know how many hours it takes to groom that mustache, though?
I traveled on the Amtrak Acela, our sorry excuse for a fast train. And just the entire way that he phrases it. Well, frankly, I got news for you.
Everything's about him.
Right.
In other words, I have no problem with what he's complaining about there. I mean, the roller coaster is ridiculous, but Acela is, I mean, it's nice, but the lack of money we've put into high-speed rail is criminal.
Yeah, but I got to tell
you,
even when
I agree
the difference
with Friedman,
between Acela and the regional one is a big deal. And frankly,
you're right.
I would love to save another hour on that Acela train, but that's actually one of the poorest examples of
where,
because
what we should have is between Los Angeles and San Francisco and Dallas and Houston.
Exactly.
You know, and Pensacola, where Scotty lives, all the way, really anywhere Scott needs to
but
go.
The problem is,
Pensacola to Destin would be good for Scott.
He can't write about that because he takes his private jet.
No, but you
when
know,
he goes that direction.
Right, but he also can't write about it. This is kind of the point, which is why it drives me crazy, is that everything about is in the first person. Everything is about, well, I, blah, blah, blah. Well, I. He can't just write a column about this is a terrible situation. It's always about the hardship he goes through because of the situation.
Right.
And he's
I
never
had
been
so
on
many drop place. Calls on my cell phone that you'd have to thought I was on a remote desert island, not traveling from Washington, New York City.
He's probably in the quiet car, too.
Now, he goes on to say that we need Michael Bloomberg to fix this. Now, I don't know how Michael Bloomberg's going to fix our cell phone service unless Michael Bloomberg is going to buy all of the cell phone providers.
Now, you know I work with Bloomberg on the gun stuff.
Yeah.
But I've learned, and I love what he does there. Not omnipotent, though. Probably not a man able to just snap his fingers and make cell phone service work.
Right. And of all things, when I got back to the Union Station, the escalator in the parking garage was broken. You know, it's just unbelievable that that fat guy is going to have to walk down those stairs.
Sometimes.
Maybe you've
escalators
gotten.
Escalators just let you down.
Maybe you've gotten used to all this and stopped noticing. I haven't. Like, you know what? It's just
it's our
what
fault.
A whiny
See what I mean? We all
bastard.
Stopped noticing.
I suspect that people's lack of health care, people's economic insecurity, people's concern with a host of other, more dramatic problems. You know, like, because I got news for you. The Acela is just full of business people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not, you know, this is not a, the problem of having to go over a pothole. I got, this is so out of touch. It's stunning. He is writing this to the same people he will see. His audience for this is so narrow.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Anyways, I don't know why, but as you know,
I mean, he writes for the New York Times. That's not insulting the New York Times. It's just there's a certain set of people that are reading him.
Well, I'm sorry. The audience that's reading it is far broader. This guy should just
But he's not writing it for... That column is not being written for you or me or really most people.
Right.
He's running it for his little crowd of insidery guys who go through the same problems as him.
Somehow we need a billionaire to step in. And then he goes on to say, like, you know, everybody's beating us, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on, but today neither party is generating that mandate to fix everything. Talking seriously enough about the taxes that will have to be raised or the entitlement spending that will have to be cut to put us on a sustainable footing. You know what? Just a scumbag. Let alone offering an inspired vision of American renewal that might motivate such sacrifice. Such sacrifice.
It's terrible.
Oh, you may have to... You know, Tom Friedman may have to go back to the same tax rate that he and his wife were paying almost 12 years ago? My Lord.
It does make me cry.
My Lord. Now, of course, that is the equivalent sacrifice to the over 50% or 60% of Americans who rely on Social Security for over 50% of their income in retirement. So in other words, him having to pay 3% more taxes on his billions of dollars, which he probably won't budge his effective tax rate anyways because his accountants haven't figured it out, is the equivalent of sacrifice that he would demand of a 68, 69, 70-year-old, 67-year-old, maybe, you know, someone they need to stay on their job as a janitor for a couple more years and basically take, you know, drop their income from $2,000 a month down to, you know, $1,800 a month. Yeah, they're gonna get that's again, the equivalent sacrifice.
The sacrifice for those people that rely, we talked about this last night here, who rely completely on Social Security, or at least for 50% of their income. You had some good numbers on that. This debate gets me so angry because this shared sacrifice garbage. First of all, obviously it hasn't been shared. People at the top have done all sorts of things and found all sorts of ways to not pay money and have gotten away with being bailed out and getting bonuses and the rest. I mean, everybody knows this. I don't need to go into it. But in addition to all of that, there, you know, Social Security, anybody looking at it, like the CBO and other people objectively, will be fully funded till 2038. All right, I feel like I need to keep saying that.
It's not the CBO. It's the Social Security Trust trustees come out with a report. I think they came out with it either this week or Monday next week.
I thought the CBO looked at it too. Okay.
Well, probably. But the trustees do the numbers. They have three different scenarios, an A, B, and C, based upon economic projections that range from optimistic to pessimistic. It's always the middle one is that we're out there. We're at 2037, 78%. This audience knows this very well.
And so here's, I mean, the top rate of the payroll tax now being $110,100. Think of all the income for Mitt Romney. That's like what, 5% of his income is going to, for most people, it's over 100% of their income is falling into the payroll tax. For Mitt Romney, what is it, 5%?
5%? No, I don't even think that. No, he's what did he make a year or something?
20 million?
Yeah, it's gotta be
it's 1%.
Yeah,
there you go.
No, 0.5%. 0.5%.
Wow. So there you go. I didn't put my point in the right place. The point is here that this is such an easy fix. I mean, all you have to do is either move the cap way up. You know what? You want shared sacrifice? I'll give you shared sacrifice. How about other people like Mitt Romney pay as much of their income in payroll taxes as you and I do?
Well, of course, he gets all that money. It's passive income.
That's a good point. It's different for him, but for a lot of people.
No, but there's no reason why it is passive income. There's no reason why he should be paying a 15% tax rate on it because of that.
But obviously, there are a lot of people that do make their money in salaries and make millions.
No, of course. Listen, traditionally, Social Security captured 91% of all income generated in this country. It is now around 80%. That just gives you a notion of maybe 81%. It gives you a notion of just how low historically the cap is. But what I even have a problem with is this notion of not just shared, but this notion of sacrifice. Because you're not sacrificing anything by paying taxes. There's no sacrifice there.
Actually, you're doing something for the common good.
It's not. It's your dues so that this society can exist. This is not a sacrifice. It enables every dollar that you earn is enabled by the taxes that you pay.
That is correct.
And so this notion of sacrifice is that is not only is the shared part a lie, the framing of it being sacrifice to pay a little bit more in taxes is also bullshit. And it is sold in such a way that if that's sacrifice to pay more in taxes, well, then, yeah, it's sacrifice.
There was a time where it was actually considered patriotic,
To get your Social Security cut. That's a sacrifice, and it's also a sacrifice to pay some taxes.
Right. But it's also just the level, obviously. It's a little more of a sacrifice if, let's say, by getting your Social Security cut, you can't afford food that week than it is if, for example, you know, by having your taxes go up, you only take 8 trips to Belize that year.
Well, no, you won't. But that doesn't happen. The point is that doesn't happen. And it is like saying, you know what? I'm going to have to make the sacrifice to put gas in my car today. No. That's not a sacrifice. That comes part and parcel with the car. If you want the car to go forward, Now, maybe you got to plug it in. I'm going to make the sacrifice to plug in my... No, it doesn't make any sense. That's what makes the car go forward. That's what enables the car. The car doesn't exist unless there's some mechanism in which to drive it forward. So it's not... It doesn't make sense, semantically, to say it's a sacrifice to pay taxes. No, it is what enables the benefits you get from society.
Good point.
That's what just enrages me. Well, there's a lot of things, obviously, that piss me off. But let's, you know what? Let's bring it down a notch. It's obviously,
it's casual Friday.
It's casual
we
Friday.
Have some fun with Romney.
Okay, wait a second. Before we get to Romney, we're going to do Romney in the post show. I may even have to do because we're already past the freebie show time limit, but. We'll continue to talk in the post show, and I'm not going to go to the post show yet because, ladies and gentlemen, this is actually incredibly sad. And I don't know if Matt and Hillary are aware of this back in New York City, but I got an email from Jimmy Reefercake, and it is well. Let me first play his. What he is basically offered for this week.
Excellent.
His song of the week. I have not heard it, but I'm sure it will not disappoint. So here, ladies and gentlemen, is Jimmy Reefercake's song of the week. And I got to say, it is also going to be Jimmy Reefercake's final song. I don't know if he's going on hiatus or what, but...
No way.
Yeah, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Jimmy Reefercake's Heartless Bastards about his governor. He is a maniac, as you know. His governor, Lepage.
Heartless bastards, what are you up to now? If there's a way to screw the poor, I know you'll find a way how. Look at Governor LePage and his phony rage. He's all propped up on his Tea Party stage. He's a heartless bastard for sure. And it don't even matter that he grew up poor. Heartless bastards, what are you up to now? I'm gonna find out what you're up to. I'm gonna sing it loud. Heartless bastards. You heartless bastards. Oh my, my, you heartless bastards. Oh, you heartless bastards.
Wow, that was great. I wish I had my applause button. I don't, but that was getting a little trippy, too, towards the end.
That was quality stuff.
It was an excellent song, and here's the email I got from Jimmy Reefercake. Happy 420 Friday.
Nice.
This is, of course, National Jimmy Reefercake Day. First of all, I want to thank you for all of your positive reviews and time you've spent with my music on your show over the past year. It is quite a resume builder and training ground for an aspiring political songwriter such as myself. However, I will no longer be delivering my awesome songs to you every week.
Whoa.
Yeah. A little sad. I did find a partner to help pay me bills for my website and will be doing even more at allthehypocrisy.com. He goes on to say, I will call you to give some of the points that we'll talk about there on your show. In general, you'll see more of a variety of media discussed than in the past year when I tended to focus mostly on your show. Wow, he's branching out. You know I have one album out called Reefer Madness. I think everyone should buy it if they care for my music. Looking to the future, I'll release another album tentatively named Ronald Reagan Steaming Golden Shower. That has a bunch more songs. On this last day, I present to you two short songs First, Heartless Bastards, which we just heard. And my goodbye song, This Won't Be the End of Jimmy Reefer Cake. So, ladies and gentlemen, here is the last of Jimmy Reefer Cake's songs, entitled This Won't Be the End of Jimmy Reefer Cake. Jimmy Reefer Cake says, enjoy and send my love to the entire Majority Report Nation. So it is with great sorrow that I now play this song, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't you worry, this won't be the end of Jimmy Reefer Cake. But I'm sorry, my friends, it's time for me to go. I haven't sold many albums yet, so I thought I'd let you know. It'd be a nice way to show that you care for the music of Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Yes, I love it. Goes out with a promotional bang, if you will.
A marketing pitch.
Of course.
Everyone should buy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can always find Jimmy Reefercake at allthehypocrisy.com. I want to thank Jimmy. He has been doing this for, I think, over a year now. And
he was here when I got here, and I think this is
this is
my one-year anniversary, Sam.
Is today?
Whenever, I don't remember when this conference was. It was the first time I came on for a Friday was this.
It wasn't.
Yeah, it was Mass Torch.
You're kidding.
I'm serious. The win a year ago.
Huh. I had no idea.
I just don't know the exact date.
I had no idea. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if there's somebody out there who wants to, we've got the door is wide open now for Screaming Majority on hiatus. Maybe permanent. Maybe temporary. Jimmy Reefer Cake, it seems, has... That didn't even sound like a hiatus to me. That sounded like moving on to better...
You're just not cutting it anymore, Sam.
Yeah, I guess not.
No.
So, folks, if you're out there and you got a weekly news roundup song, send one in. Starting next week, we're going to be looking for it. I don't know what's going to have to happen. Maybe I'll have Mila write one up. She's not very inclined in that fashion. But, folks, you can also support this program by becoming a member at Majority.fm. I don't know what it is. I know last week we had pre-tapes, and I've been on the road this week. But we need some new members, folks. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, you know, somebody was telling me last night, like, you got to get more aggressive with the way that you pitch, and I just can't. I just...
Damn you people. I can't do it either. Seriously, folks, support the guy.
Yeah, thank
Sam's
you.
Sam's got some talent, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's also, I think we put out an entertaining product, and...
Well, that's what I mean.
Whether or not you are interested in another 50 minutes a day, if you got the cash, pay for the first 40. Why not?
There you go.
Just think of it as a donation, an ongoing donation. It'd make you feel better when you get the free swag. Oh, you know, in the post-show, and the better half of the show today, I'll talk about running into Cross and Will Arnett.
Wow,
David Cross and Will Arnett. Only, this is its name drop that, Friday.
Right, only those who pay for the...
Yeah, I'm not sure how interesting that is to people, but, you know, the very least, they wouldn't have heard this if it wasn't for that. So let's go to the... we'll head into now the... better half the program. You can call me at 696-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the phone number. You can IM me at Majority FM. You want to ask a question of Cliff Schechter, call in, ask
or
a question.
Or just insult me, really.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
I'm kind of a dick.
It's actually, folks, saw Cliff getting pulled out of the casino last night. It was embarrassing. Dragged out.
Tasered. Beaten.
And if folks have some secret way of me winning money quickly... because I'm heading home today.
Rain
please,
Man, if you're out there.
646.
We need you, baby.
257-3920. The IM is Majority FM. I know we have some conservatives and libertarians who have been itching to call in. Please do. Happy to take your call.
We love you guys, too.
We'll be right back.
In a platonic way, of course.
In just a moment.